And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Big Football Show, a podcast from The Athletic about Big Ten football. I'm Mitch Sherman. Scott Docterman is with me, and we are here to put a bow on the Big Ten's bowl season and also pick up the pieces from Monday night. And wow, Scott, that was some show by Alabama. The Crimson Tide beat Ohio State 52-24 in Miami in the college football playoff national championship. Your thoughts on the destruction of the Buckeyes?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised simply because of the way I figured Alabama could score. And I think we all saw that through the course of the season. But a couple of things that kind of caught me by surprise was, one, I thought Ohio State would keep up. And I'm not saying that they would have won necessarily, but, you know, 24 points was probably about two touchdowns lighter than what I thought they would get. The players who couldn't play really had an impact on Ohio State. And I just saw the defense either was worn down or just simply wasn't good enough. And there were a lot of points I saw through the course of the game, and we can kind of go through them point by point. But overall, injuries, COVID, and porous defense really, to me, caught the Buckeyes in a significant way.
Yeah, and then obviously just the abundance of talent from Alabama. It's difficult to even put into words, and I know our friends in the SEC will spend a lot of time post-mortem continuing to go over this, and we don't need to get too deep, but the combination of Devontae Smith and Najee Harris, and, you know, I'll put Mac Jones in there. I don't think he's the kind of transcendent talent that those other two are. Mm-hmm. Maybe not an odds-on favorite like the other two to win Rookie of the Year in the NFL next season, but the three of them together – you know, what a combination that they were. And that offense, I think, was just unstoppable. I would agree with you, Scott, that Ohio State was going to have to score a lot of points, even if the Buckeyes were at full strength all around, just to stay in this game. And unfortunately, Ohio State was not at full strength. The Buckeyes dealt with COVID issues for much of the second half of this season. There was speculation after the semifinal victory against Clemson about problems in Columbus. And then before kickoff on Monday night, we learned that Ohio State was without defensive tackle Tommy Togiai, defensive end Tyreek Smith, and kicker Blake Hawbell. But really, the absence of the kicker was maybe a good thing. Ohio State didn't need to be tempted into trying to kick field goals. This was a touchdown kind of a night because of that firepower that I mentioned on the side of Alabama. And Ohio State did keep up early with the Crimson Tide. Bama went up 7-0, and then Ohio State answered with an impressive drive that Master Teague capped by scoring on the ground. I thought Justin Fields looked good early, but clearly he wasn't 100% after the big hit that he took in the semifinal. And really the one that was just kind of a knockout punch in my mind for Ohio State was losing Trey Sermon on the opening possession, went out with a shoulder injury and did not return in this game. He had been so effective late in the season. And if Ohio State had a chance to keep up punch for punch with Alabama, I thought Trey Sermon was going to have to really carry the load, and in part just to keep Alabama's offense on the sideline.
Yeah, I mean, the one area that I looked at with Ohio State that I thought where it gave them literally a puncher's chance was the fact that they were so physical up front and they had such a great running back in Trey Sermon. What we saw, I wouldn't say he came out of nowhere, but he kind of did, you know, to be able to play the way he did against Northwestern and then Clemson back to back was just, wow. I mean, it was like Ezekiel Elliott, but I think it was even greater than that. But when he went down, and Master Teague's a really good running back too. I mean, I think he was second team all Big Ten. That was, you know, in some ways you kind of thought, okay, this is going to be tough for him, but they weren't able to keep that up. And then Wyatt Davis got hurt. And that was really a big factor because he's good of a guard as there is in the country. And I think that was really impactful, but by and large, I don't want to put the blame totally on Justin Fields. He was injured, as we know, but 17 of 33 is just not going to get it done against a team like against Alabama. I mean, you're going to have to be what he was against Clemson. And that was a six touchdown performance. And if that was his greatest game, which it was, this one was more in the Indiana lines, you know, just average, you know, slightly below average. I mean, you complete only 50% of your passes and you've got good targets. But I also think that Alabama did a really good job in coverage. Patrick Surtain was everything and more than I thought he would be. And he really took away his side of the field. You know, there were some good passes to the tight ends, but just not enough of them. And when you got to go score for score with a team like that, and Devontae Smith, you know, I voted him number two for the Heisman. After the semifinals, I would have changed that vote and put Lawrence second and him first. Now I would have left second vacant based on, on what I've seen last two games. I mean, this guy is unreal. And the talent, oh my gosh.
Yeah, my take on Smith, I just didn't see enough of him during the year.
Yeah.
I mean, Alabama's kind of Alabama. I don't know from my perspective, I'm not studying Alabama unless I need to. I saw the Tide play early against Ole Miss in that crazy shootout when Alabama needed all of four quarters to beat Lane Kiffin. Mm-hmm. But after that, I didn't watch a lot of Alabama really until the Georgia game. And by that point, Jalen Waddle was out and Devontae Smith had taken a completely different role in the offense from what we saw early in the year. So I didn't have him on my ballot until the final couple weeks of the season. And then he rocketed up. You know, we do the straw poll with Matt Fortuna at The Athletic here, who puts it together. And even in my final submission to Matt after the conference championship games, I had Devontae Smith number two. And I actually had Mac Jones atop my ballot most of the year. And in the days leading up to the deadline to submit the actual vote, I changed my mind. And I couldn't get past the fact from watching Smith against Georgia in the SEC championship that Florida in that tight game, you know, it was 52-46 and he was lights out. I couldn't get past the fact that he was the best player in the country. So on my final ballot, I did have him there. And then he validated that obviously in the semifinal and in the first half last night. Just disappointed that we didn't get to see him play a full game and hope that his hand injury, you know, he spent like 15 minutes in the injury tent on Monday night and then had it all wrapped up after the game. Hope that isn't something that prevents him from showing all the NFL teams what he can be ahead of the draft. But I think he's put it all on tape and, you know, he's not necessarily somebody who needs to go out there and star at the combine or have a great performance in a workout. They know, those teams know at this point what they're getting in Devontae Smith. And I can't wait to watch him at the next level.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to have to do any kind of receiving drills. I think he could stand on his laurels based on this last season. So you're not going to see him catching passes from Mac Jones, Kyle Trask, or Justin Fields at the combine, if we even have a combine. Who knows what COVID will do there. But no, I think he's going to be fine. It's just, I was just thinking about last year's wide receiver room at Alabama when you have Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Devontae Smith, and Jalen Waddle all in the same room. That is an embarrassment of riches. That is the greatest wide receiver room in college football history. I mean, you have two first-round draft picks, and then you've got two more the next year. That's just incredible. And Smith is as great as all of them are, Smith is the best. And it was just a really impressive performance. But I think, you know, Ohio State, whether they were trying to cover up for their losses up front with Tyreek Smith and Tony Tagai, I think it's, you know, going to that 44 just was not the best move when you got that kind of speed on the field. And when, you know, the play of the game really was Tough Borland trying to keep up with Devontae Smith. And you're just no, that's not, doesn't work.
I think that's the image of the game to me. That touchdown in late in the first half where Tough Borland, number 32, the linebacker for Ohio State, is chugging down the field. And it wasn't a blown assignment necessarily. It was just no match at all. And it's crazy to think, you know, for those of us who live in the Big Ten and cover the Big Ten, that you could put a team on the field that would be that much better athletically than Ohio State. Because when we see Ohio State on Saturdays, whether we're in the stadium or we're watching on TV around the Big Ten, Ohio State is the team that man for man across the board has better athletes everywhere than the opponent. And that the tables were turned last night. I understand that those Alabama receivers and even some of the Alabama guys on defense are going to do that to everybody. And those receivers that you mentioned in that room, the majority of which were all in the same 2017 recruiting class. And if our listeners want to hear more about that or learn more about that, go read Aaron Suttle's story this week on The Athletic about that incredible 2017 recruiting class at Alabama that included all of those guys. I don't know that Waddle was in that group, but the other three were, in addition to Tua Tagovailoa, Mac Jones, Alex Leatherwood, the Outland Trophy winner for this year, Dylan Moses, who was offered by Alabama and LSU and others as an eighth grader in high school and was a five-star guy out of Baton Rouge. The list just goes on and on. But, you know, Alabama, those receivers, you know, in a few years, I think will bear out. If you put them all in the same locker room when they're 25 years old, it would be the best receiving core in the NFL at that time. So not a shock that Alabama can do that, can turn the tables like that on Ohio State. But I'm with you on that play. And not just the symbolism of that play of watching Devontae Smith run past Tough Borland like he was standing still, but that was kind of the moment of the game too, where it was just very apparent that there was no way Ohio State was going to be able to keep up. It was those closing minutes of the second quarter where Alabama knew it had an opportunity to separate itself a bit and then get the ball to start the second half, where the writing was on the wall at that point of the game. And you know, credit to Ohio State. I'm interested in your thoughts on this. Ohio State did answer very quickly when Alabama came out and scored. And Alabama took like 7 minutes off the clock at the start of the third quarter with a long drive, make it 38-17. And then Ohio State scored in like 60 seconds. I believe Fields threw a nice pass to Garrett Wilson in the corner of the end zone. Yeah. It's 38-24. You're thinking, okay, you know, maybe we have a game here. Devontae Smith is not out there on the field. And Alabama still, you know, found a way to, you know, grind it out and put that thing out of reach late in the third quarter.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Yeah, it was that was really the cementing point, because it was going to still be tough for Ohio State to come back. But if, you know, if they make a stop, they get a touchdown, you go in the fourth quarter down by a touchdown, hey, you've got an opportunity, and they couldn't quite do that. And really, it comes back to then Ohio State's defense. And number one, not enough pass rush. And that's what happens when you have, you know, the two guys out up front. And if they had a Chase Young like they did last year, maybe that impacts the game. I mean, they're able early on to force that turnover off that blitz. But throughout the course of the game, they just weren't able to get enough pass rush on Jones, you know, who threw for 464 yards and five touchdowns. So I thought if there was a one thing that really bothered me about Ohio State's performance, was I thought the tackling was really suspect. And now Najee Harris is tough enough to, it's hard to tackle him. However, I do think that was poor. That was poorly done, the tackling on defense. And I think that's really what, you know, impacted that game from that point on, but also throughout it. But then you just look statistically, and this was as dominant as the scoreboard. I mean, Bama had 621 yards to 341. They had 21 more plays, 83-62. They had a 15-minute time of possession advantage. So, but then, you know, I don't know what you think, but going back before the season, I thought there's no way we could judge the 2020 champion against the greats from the past and say, yeah, this one's not going to go down in the history books. But you know what? I've changed my mind on that. Alabama is great, and it deserves its place alongside the greats of all time.
Yeah, it's 13-0. If Ohio State had won last night and had played dominant all season in the same way that Alabama did, then, you know, I think you could look at them and say, hey, they're only 8-0. You can't put them on the same level as great championship teams. But what can you say about Alabama? This is Nick Saban's it's his seventh national championship. Incredible. separating him from Bear Bryant. He's now alone atop the list of coaches in their crowns. But it's only his second 13-0 team. So right there, it is in the conversation among Nick Saban's greatest teams, which if you're in that conversation, you're in the conversation for the greatest teams ever. I don't know that we can anoint them right now. Alabama did play that tight game against Ole Miss that we referenced early in the season. That's not something that we saw from, say, 2001. Well, we did see it from 2001 Miami. I believe there was a close game early in the season for the Canes that year. We didn't see it from 1995 Nebraska. There were not really close games in that season for the Huskers. And then there was a tight game for Alabama in the conference championship against Florida, as we mentioned too. So the way that the Tide played at the end, the way that Saban's team dispatched of Notre Dame and Ohio State, I think is worth putting them in that conversation. The 13-0, the three stars on offense, Smith, Harris, and Jones are almost unmatched, I think, in college football history as a trio. So all of that to me, yeah, they're definitely in the conversation.
Yeah, and I think this is a season that you let marinate a little bit, because I just don't want I hate the whole recency bias, and then I also hate legacy bias. I mean, recency bias would say, yeah, this team's the greatest because they had to play a 10-game SEC schedule. They averaged the most points in SEC history at 48.5 per game. You know, the amount of touchdowns for Smith and Harris and stuff like that. But then I also – want to wait because of the legacy bias, as you mentioned. I mean, this happens in every sport where you look back and you're like, there's no way anybody would be better than, say, 95 Nebraska. Now, Nebraska's that team you covered. Well, I was
around that team.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I am that old.
Me too. So that team is in competition with every team, if you put it in that category. Is it better than 01 Miami, 04 USC? I don't know, and we could always have that discussion, and it always makes for a good bar debate. But I think this Alabama team is in that category. Now, where it finalizes, I don't know. I mean, let's see what next year brings. But I think this is this was certainly a worthy champion, and clearly the most dominant team in the country. And it deserved every accolade I could get. You can't make any kind of excuses. Even the players that were out for Ohio State, maybe they make a touchdown's difference. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you believe the hype, Bryce Young is going to be better than all of these other quarterbacks who came before him at Alabama. So
it could be.
They're just getting started. Nick Saban's going to turn 70 here in the next year. You know, just keep them rolling. But
yeah,
we want to talk about what's next for the Buckeyes for a few minutes here. Of course, as is customary in the moments after the championship game, Stuart Mandel's way too early top 25 is out, published now. Check it out on The Athletic. Ohio State as the top Big Ten team for this next year in that ranking checks in at number 6. And the biggest question, who's going to replace Justin Fields? There's not a Bryce Young waiting in the wings in Columbus. You have a couple of freshmen who were on the roster this year, Jack Miller and CJ Stroud, or maybe it's 2021 signee Kyle McCord, but this is not going to be a proven quarterback for Ryan Day in his third year atop that program. We know that Ohio State recruits better than any other program in the Big Ten, among the best in the country, and it has continued to do that, if not taken it up a notch under Ryan Day. But it feels like something more than, I would say, a traditional reload at Ohio State over the next 8 to 9 months. Do you get that feeling?
Yeah, I do. I mean, this is a team that's still going to have all kinds of talent, and this is the difference between Ohio State and everybody else in the Big Ten, because they can still roll out 4 and 5 stars as backups when they lose people to the NFL. But I also had the same feeling not that long ago when JT Barrett left after 4 years. And then you're looking at, it's either going to be Dwayne Haskins or Joe Burrow. And we're going, well, that is
who are those guys?
One ends up winning the Heisman. The other one's a first round draft pick. And right now it looks like an NFL flop, but I digress. I don't know what we're going to see out of these guys. They're young. They don't have a track record. They will probably have a spring. That's a good thing for everybody, including them. So they're not going to go in cold to the season. Justin Fields, though, was an otherworldly talent. And I just wonder what Georgia would have been like with him. But I also think that, he out of all the great quarterbacks they've had over the last 20 plus years or whatever, he's the best. He was better than, Barrett athletically. Terrell Pryor, he's way more athletic than Terrell Pryor. Troy Smith won the Heisman, and he they had a similar skill set, but Fields was better at it. He was bigger. He was more athletic. I think this is a year where, Braxton Miller, certainly Fields could throw lasers compared to him. I just think this is going to be a really tough replacement, and they're going to play some tough teams in the Big Ten. I think the Big Ten – some teams are going to bounce back. I think Penn State's going to bounce back for sure. Michigan, probably. I wouldn't think they're going to be as bad, but they didn't play them anyway. Depending on what their schedule is going to end up being, if they play Wisconsin or Iowa or somebody like that, it could be a challenge on the other side as well. So this is going to be they're going to face some competition next year, and I don't know that they're going to go unblemished.
Yeah, a final thought on Fields. I will say, I don't think you get the sense when you watch him on TV, at least I didn't until I saw him in person. And standing on a field, on a football field, watching Justin Fields throw a ball is just a sight to behold. And I know all of these guys are huge. And if you're going to look at a lineup of first-round draft picks, Trevor Lawrence is a specimen, but to watch Justin Fields and stand next to him, I've done that, throw a football, you know, 50 yards in the air and just kind of flick it with his wrist. It's incredible. And you can take it for granted when you watch a game like that and you see him operate and you know he's a little bit injured, but Ohio State is going to miss him and he's going to be really tough to replace. I'm with you. He's as good as Ohio State has had, or probably better at that position during this you know run under Urban Meyer and now Ryan Day. So it will be interesting to see what Ohio State has done in recruiting at the quarterback position and which one of those guys is going to be the heir apparent, because he made this thing go. Fields made it go. He had good receivers, very good receivers. He had a couple of good running backs. They had a good defense, but it was about him. He's the reason that Ohio State was there last night in that game. And if you replace him with a guy who's a couple, three notches below him, then I think there's an opportunity for others in the Big Ten to take their cracks at the Buckeyes in a window that could be open next year. So we'll see. Others in Stuart Mandel's way too early top 25, number 11, Iowa, Scott. Are the Hawkeyes the number two team in the Big Ten heading into next season? That seems to be the opinion of Stuart. Number 13, Wisconsin. Number 16, Indiana, the upstart from this past year. Number 21, Penn State. Notably, all of those teams are set to bring back quarterbacks next season. And I would say equally interesting, no Northwestern, the reigning champ in the Big Ten West, in the way too early top 25. Of course, Northwestern is losing a lot to the transfer portal. And we covered that in our last podcast. But what do you think about those teams that are sitting out there in the mid-range of the way too early top 25?
I guess since we primarily do the Big Ten West, I mean, I think the top two are about right on. I thought Iowa ended up 17th or 16th, I think it was, in the AP top 25. And I thought that was too low, and it was really unfortunate for Iowa that they didn't get their two final games, because then they were out of sight, out of mind, and then people pass them up towards the end. So I thought that they were somewhere, they should have been somewhere around 12 this year based on the end of the season, but they were coming back. Four offensive linemen, Tyler Linderbaum, Spencer Petras improved through the course of the year. I wouldn't say that he's somebody I would put on first team all Big Ten or anything like that for going into next year. But when you have Tyler Goodson and you have the guts of most of the defense, Zach Van Valkenburgh returning for a sixth year, they're going to have to hit their transfer portal for a couple of guys up front on defense in my eyes. If they can do that, they'll have just about everybody back on their back seven. And I think they're right there formidable. I expect Wisconsin to bounce back. Graham Mertz looked great early in the year and poorly later, but they had a lot of injuries, and their receivers, when you have Pryor and Davis that weren't able to play, and Jalen Berger, who was out for most of the year, I think Wisconsin's a type of team that can bounce back in a big way. They usually have, you know, over the last 15 to 20 years, they've had that bounce back where if they go 8-4 one year, they go 10-2 or 11-1 the next. Out of the remaining two, Indiana, I'm very interested in seeing what the Hoosiers do, because this is new territory for them. They did not play well against Ole Miss. And granted, Michael Penix makes a difference, but that was not a good game against them. I thought actually they got overranked at the end of the year. I mean, to be 6-2 in the way they played, I thought, you know, they should have flipped spots with Iowa, for instance. I don't think they would have beaten a lot of teams. And then finally, Penn State is a team that will bounce back. I saw enough out of them in the last four games to think, okay, this is the team that I expected to see. They've got some holes. They now have changed offensive coordinators. They fired Kirk Soraka after one year. I think Penn State will bounce back and be among the better teams in the Big Ten.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, I do want to mention, too, for our listeners who follow Iowa, that Iowa State is ranked number 7 in this way too early top 25. So what a setup that's going to be, because Iowa State's going to be a top 10 team in all of the preseason polls, assuming that everybody stays healthy, or the key guys, Purdy and Hall, stay healthy through this offseason. So what a lead up that is going to be to the big Cy-Hawk game next September.
I can't even imagine what that's going to be like, because they've never met as ranked teams. Last couple of years with Campbell, Iowa State's been kind of bouncing. They beat you and I in a double overtime game, and they fell out of the top 25 when they last played. But if you get a top 10 or very close to it matchup in Ames, this is going to be uncharted territory for these two programs. And it will be out of this world. I mean, they're already, even for years where they're average or below that, 30,000 people go to those games just to sit in the parking lots, let alone the 60 to 70,000 who go to the game. That might be double this year.
Yeah, it'll be great. And let's hope there's 60 to 70,000 or 100,000 people around the stadium in Ames that day. And we can have that kind of an event in September of 2021. So one team that's not in the way too early top 25 and won't be in the top 25s for any of these rankings is Nebraska. Huskers coming off of a 3-5 season, and news on Monday out of Lincoln that Wandale Robinson, Nebraska's most dynamic offensive player, really over the majority of the last two seasons, the face of the program for the most part, the guy around whom Nebraska has designed its game plans and built social media campaigns, is gone. There will be no junior season for Wandale Robinson at Nebraska. He announced his transfer, citing the health of his mother back at home in Kentucky. She had COVID in late 2020 and has suffered some medical setbacks as a result of that. But there is also the looming specter of his struggles, Nebraska's struggles to get untracked in this offense. So that can't be overlooked. This is not just about the family situation. You know, wish the best for sure for Wandale and his mom, that she gets back to good health. But he would be staying at Nebraska, I'm confident in saying, if the Huskers were, say, 15-5 in his two seasons as opposed to 8-12. So not a good look, I would say, for Scott Frost as he goes out and tries to continue to build this thing at Nebraska and works on that 2022 recruiting class over this offseason. Just a difficult situation because of the investment the Huskers have made on and off the field in Wandale Robinson over these past 2 years. But he feels that his best path to the NFL is to play in a different offensive system, which is tough to take. For sure, for Nebraska and Nebraska fans, as the Huskers head toward Frost's fourth year, still in search of a winning season. What do you see from outside the borders of Nebraska when you hear the news about Wandale Robinson leaving?
Well, obviously, it brings up a lot of questions, and that is, are they on the right track? I mean, there are, when coaches are hired at places, there's a lot of hope, obviously, that goes involved with this. I mean, after three seasons, Mike Riley was ushered out at Nebraska. And there was the thought, and probably rightly so, that things were going in the wrong direction, even though he had a 9-win year in 2016. you wonder at this point, are things in the right direction? And the really the question I have is that this is as much of a investment as Nebraska's made in Scott Frost for, you know, financially and in everything he needs to be successful.
It's also not,
yes, I was going to get there. Emotional investment. Fans want him to succeed in the worst way because he's one of them. He's a tie to the past. He believes in everything that they believe in. And I think just from afar, you're living up close, but I'm not that far away where I look at this and I'm going, okay, when are you going to start to see not just results on the field, because sometimes that's difficult, but just see the overall improvement. This team is okay. They're starting to make the semblance of a good team, that they're starting to move in the right direction. And I don't know that I see that. And then when you have a player of Robinson's caliber, and he's clearly a great athlete, not a good athlete, a great athlete and a great asset for any offense in the Big Ten. And then that includes Ohio State, to see him leave like this. That brings up a lot of questions, because then you start to go, well, what about quarterback? Well, they play musical quarterbacks. And then what about all these, you know, J.D. Spielman leaving? And what about all these recruits leaving? You know, they're here a couple of months and they're gone. And you start to wonder, okay, is this really going to happen? And if it does, if it's not going to happen, when do you pull the plug on somebody that you've, again, invested in so much in every facet, including your emotions to the nth degree?
Yeah, Nebraska can't really pull the plug for anything that's happening for reasons that involve football. It can't really pull the plug at any point in the next, I would say, year. I mean, if it goes completely downhill from here, which would be a true bottoming out over the next 12 months, and Nebraska sitting after the 2021 season with no answers, you know, like a 2 or 3 win season, then yeah, I could see something along those lines happening. But short of that, you know, they're in this for the long haul, and you're coming out of a really difficult time, or you're still in a really difficult time when it comes to the finances of the athletic department. And Scott Frost was extended in the middle of that 2019 season to have 6.5 years left on his contract at that point. They're in the midst of getting ready to build a $155 million football facility that is the vision of Scott Frost, that is created for his program, for what his program looks like, for the roster size, for the what they want to do with strength and conditioning and all different parts of their operation. So they're in this thing deep, and the writing is going to have to be on the wall in bright red letters that it has to stop before they pull the plug. And I don't think it would be Bill Moose's decision to make. Bill Moose is with Scott Frost until the end. So much like a couple of previous coaching changes at Nebraska have gone down, where you saw athletic directors Steve Peterson, I'm sorry I said the name, and Sean Eichhorst, I'm sorry I said the name, let go before their coaches were cut loose. That would be the kind of scenario that would have to happen with Scott Frost. And we are not at that point, but I think in light of 3 straight losing seasons and what we saw Monday with Wandale Robinson, it raises the question at least of whether Nebraska can get out of this tailspin that it has found itself in.
Yeah, it's... You know, because, you know, the biggest thing that I've noticed is they're going to have to be better along the line of scrimmage. And that's consistently better along the line of scrimmage. And when you look at Illinois bringing in Brett Bielema, that is where they will be good. They will be a good line of scrimmage team because he believes in it. He preaches it. They may not be very good across the board, or they may be great. I don't know. But I do know this, that they will compete against along the line of scrimmage. Minnesota has built its team with PJ Fleck along the line of scrimmage. Wisconsin and Iowa, that are their hallmarks. Same thing with Northwestern. Nebraska doesn't have to aspire to be any of those programs. And I would say that you probably wouldn't want to, but you got to equal that. Once you equal that, then your system can run like a Ferrari. But you can't run your system without when people are in the backfield. and or you can't get any push off the line of scrimmage, or if your defensive tackles are into your linebackers 3 yards down the field, and then there's a gigantic hole for people to gash. It's just they're going to have to be good there. If they can do that, hey, any system can work. But I haven't seen proof of that, frankly, other than when Valentine and Malik Collins and those guys were there for Bo Pelini. I thought they were pretty good defensively. But the rest of it, it's just not been – line of scrimmage-wise, they just haven't been very good even since they joined the Big Ten.
Yeah, there were certainly some signs of progress at the line of scrimmage on the defensive side, I would say, this year, as Nebraska replaced three down linemen who went to the NFL a year ago. But it's not at the level that Nebraska needs to consistently compete against Wisconsin, against Iowa, against the best teams in the Big Ten. So that's something that's going to have to continue to improve. There are signs of improvement on the defensive side. There is momentum on the defensive side, even with players returning. And the opposite of that is happening right now on the offensive side of the ball, as was more evidence was presented on Monday with Robinson's departure and the departure of senior offensive lineman Matt Farniok, a 32-game starter who announced that he's going to go on and try his luck at the next level in the NFL. Not a surprise. No criticism there for sure. But again, it's just not a whole lot of good news for Nebraska offensively so far in this short offseason. So want to end it with this. In this episode, we are at the end now of this 2020 season. The Big Ten finished 3-2 in bowl games, wins by Ohio State, of course, in the semifinal against Clemson, Northwestern, and Wisconsin. And we mentioned Indiana's loss to Ole Miss, and we've talked about Ohio State's loss last night. So this was a season really unlike any other that I think we have experienced, that anyone around college football has experienced. We're thankful that the Big Ten had a season. It's hard to imagine at one point there was a plan to kick it off around this time right now in January. How are we going to, Scott, look back on this season in the Big Ten? What will history tell us about the 2020 football season?
Oh, man, that's a tough question. I mean, I think you look at it for what it was, a truncated and jagged season that, really had no flow. There were a lot of only two teams were able to run the race and play every game on its schedule. And neither one of those teams even wanted to play in a bowl game after the fact. It was just a crazy year. And I think there were some success stories, obviously. I think Northwestern, one of the best stories, to go from having a horrific offense in 2019 that just smelled like gangrene to one that was, very good at times with Peyton Ramsey at the helm and to lead Ohio State and to blow out Auburn with a roster that was depleted by transfer portal guys and injuries. So I think there are some good stories. Indiana, of course. I think Iowa was a good story late in the year. And then there are other stories that you just kind of write off. So I don't know that you – I think you just kind of look at it for what it is, a tough year, and you just hope that everybody learns from it. And I think that's from the administration on down, that this was not handled the best way. And but the players did the most they could with what they were dealt.
Yeah, every team's story is greatly overshadowed by the bigger issue of COVID-19. And some teams used it to their advantage. I think you can look at Indiana, you can look at Northwestern and see the way that those programs handled things and the way that they rolled with some breaks, the way that Indiana was able to take that crazy win against Penn State in the opening game and build off of it and turn it into something special. And, I think Northwestern of all programs and really universities in the league and in the country was as well prepared as any school out there to deal with some of the issues. It's a smaller campus. That's a factor for sure. But just to deal with a pandemic, credit to Northwestern for doing a great job there. And that's a factor in how this season rolled. And on huge campuses like Penn State, like Minnesota, like Wisconsin, this thing was just more difficult to manage. And I think as we look back at it, that's going to be a reason why all of those teams had significant problems during the season. Just the amount of people that the student athletes were around. You know, you couldn't put those guys entirely into a bubble. This wasn't the NBA. They weren't at Disney World. They were on these college campuses where students are going to mix with each other. And, fortunately, hopefully, knock on wood, as we go into 2021 and get some football into our year, that is not going to be a concern in how teams have to manage the next season that we get to watch on the football field in the Big Ten. So those are my parting words. Let's go and get things normal over these next several months. So that is our show for today. Our bowl wrap up, our college football playoff championship review. Please continue to listen to the Big Football Show. Subscribe on Apple and Spotify. Review our show. Give us a 5-star rating. And of course, subscribe to The Athletic for coverage from all of us and much more. Thanks for listening.